No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, a grassroots talk show which will try to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from Washington, D.C., America's last colonies. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So feel free to call in and be part of the conversation. Call in with a question at 888-627-6008. Maria's off tonight. She's on vacation. I hope she's having a good time somewhere, drinking a margarita for me. And tonight we have two very special guests. We have Harvey Wasserman, who's an author, radio host, and environmentalist. And we have our old friend Charles Moreland, who's been on the show before, the first elected representative from the District of Columbia. And we're going to talk about many issues tonight, but front and center will be a march that we're planning on having August 28th, which is next Saturday. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's great to be with you, Senator. Much appreciated.
Thank you for having me, Senator. Yeah, thank you, guys. Let me start with you, Charles. I mean, with you, Harvey. We're just hearing the reports now that 21 are dead and 45 are missing in Tennessee due to rapid flash floods. We see, as a result of global climate change, more and more of these types of situations, and the forest fires on the West Coast, and all this flooding in the South. And I wonder, because I remember being on Capitol Hill 30 years ago and having a lot of congressmen say, oh, you know, global climate change, this is just natural. It's got nothing to do with fossil fuels or any of this nonsense. We can have clean coal. We can have, you know, we can burn more oil. Is there anybody on Capitol Hill that still believes that, Harvey?
I think so, actually. But the bottom line is that we are seeing the evidence every day. I mean, I'm out here in California, Northern California is burning up. We've had days and days in L.A. where you couldn't breathe the air because of the not because of the traffic the way it was in the 50s, but because of the forest fires and the brush fires that are out of control. I mean, we haven't had rain here in months. You know, it's just unreal and very, very dangerous. And we all know it's because of the impacts of human beings on climate change. And we also know that we have the solutions, and the solutions have made themselves very clear. And ironically, the solution to the global climate change problem is also something we would do for economic reasons, because the conversion to renewable energy, to solar panels, to windmills, to batteries, and to increased efficiency are all better for the environment, better for jobs, better for the price of energy than the fossil nuclear madness that we have going on now.
Well, you know, in that regard, I see that you were educated in Ohio to some extent. And my brother was president of a college in Ohio, Zane State. And Zane State teamed up with David Wilhelm, the former chief of staff, and they built a gigantic solar field. And it was a win-win because it not only provided power for the community, but the community college that my brother ran got to train people on how to put in the solar panels. So at the end of the day, they not only had more, you know, a better, cleaner power, but they also had a bunch of young people that were now trained for the jobs of the future. How do we get more of that? Do you have any idea?
Well, you got it 100% right, and congratulations to your brother. That's a great thing that they did. And, you know, solar panels are treated by the right wing as this kind of hippie sideshow. And, in fact, solar and wind are two of the biggest industries in the world now. People aren't putting up solar panels because they want to smoke dope. They're putting up solar panels because they work. They're incredibly efficient, and they are way cheaper than any other form of new energy now. You cannot build a coal plant or a gas plant or a certainly not a nuclear plant that will compete with solar energy, especially if you put it on rooftops. Michael, there are now two places where solar panels need to go. They need to go on the rooftops of homes and commercial and industrial facilities, and they need to go floating on reservoirs because solar panels actually work better when they're cool. Hot weather is not that great for solar panels. Usually you'll have the sun, but they work more efficiently when they're cooled. And the new technology, which is incredibly successful, is floating solar panels. If you float them on reservoirs and on the aqueducts, it cuts the evaporation at least in half, so you save all that water, and at the same time, the solar panels are cooled, and they're easier to clean. So,
well,
that's
you
a
know,
triple
we,
win there.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Harvey. You know, here in Washington,
no, go ahead.
We have several big reservoirs. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with our water system, but it's very, very old. And what we have are these giant holding tanks in several parts of the city that where the water is brought in from the river before it's cleaned. So this seems like a perfect place for it. Maybe we should push for that. And
absolutely.
while we're on the subject, before we get to Charles, how about our march? What's your plan to go to the White House with a solar panel? Do we still have that? Is that still part of the plan?
Well, we had to push that back because of the COVID. You know, much to our sadness, we had a drum circle and all these things lined up. But we are converting August 30th.
Yeah, let me jump in and weigh in on the whole climate change issue, and then let's see how we can show how it relates to D.C. statehood.
Okay, hold on a second, Charles. Let's Don, make sure we're getting Harvey back because he's fading out in the background. I don't know what that is. Go ahead, Charles. I'm sorry.
Yeah, climate change is real, and it is an existential threat. And there are a lot of people who believe that it's 10 to 15 years away. But that is not true.
It's crazy.
Climate change is upon us.
Yeah.
And the crisis.
Just ask the people of Tennessee. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And California is on fire.
California.
And it's not just in the United States. And Siberia is on fire. The trees have dried because of drought. They're on fire in Greece. Olive vines and olive trees that takes 30 years to replace have burned in amounts that have never been seen before. So the crisis milieu we face today includes also COVID-19 pandemic. You add that to cataclysmic climate change and the food insecurity, it makes this mix of crisis circumstances even worse that we have fascist, racist, right-wing insurrectionists trying to destroy American democracy at a time when we need it most. And so a global sense of gloom and doom shapes the urgent tone of the Dream March to commemorate Dr. King's March on Washington. And it also highlights and emphasizes the need for D.C. statehood. Right now you have 712,000 American citizens who are locked out of the process of solving the problem. with the earth on fire, with the climate change, with all the problems that the nation faces, D.C. citizens are locked out. We have no voice in the decision-making process. And it's not just, you know, the negative impact on us. It, quite frankly, is the negative impact that has on the nation and, in fact, the world. Because two D.C. senators would be Democratic, they'd be urban, they'd be liberal. And with two D.C. senators, you know, many of these, the bills and voter suppression that we're facing, we'd be able to eliminate because we know that D.C. Senators, like yourself, Senator, are going to be liberal. The Green New Deal would be passed, and we wouldn't have to worry about the filibuster because we have a clear majority no matter what Joe Manchin did in the Senate, and we could pass these bills and not worry about the filibuster.
Well, you know, I would just add to that, Charles, and I'm a little biased here, but we're not only cut out of the conversation, but we're the people that make policy. We're the people that work on public interest. We're the people that do this every day, and our voices are not heard. You know, this is, I say this all the time, this is like telling the people of Detroit that they can't drive cars. You know, we're at the center of all these things, and then in the end, our voice is kept out.
Right.
So,
that's funny. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I like that.
It's crazy. How many of our neighbors, you know, how many of our neighbors work for, you know, Greenpeace and National Organization of Women and, you know, all the other, and I don't care even if you're right wing, the National Rifle Association, all these organizations are here in Washington and we work for them. Probably more people work in the public interest in Washington than work in government. So they're not only cutting us out of the conversation, they're cutting people that have a lot to say out of the conversation.
Yeah, let me bring that home.
There's
to
one
DC. Bring that home.
Yeah.
DC citizens are mere servants at the banquet table of democracy. And even our illustrious DC delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, who's at the table, is at the table with an empty plate.
Yep. I don't think a lot of people realize that. Yeah.
Right. And I'm sorry I got cut off there.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
There's another big piece of this, which is of national interest, and Michael, you'll be co-convening on with Charles and company on our national roundtable on August 30th, Monday from 1 to 5. But the one thing on everybody's mind is that we saw the global impact of D.C. not having statehood during the attack on January 6th, where the mayor of D.C., without a governor, had no direct access to the National Guard. And so our nation's capital was greatly put at risk by the lack of statehood for D.C. And that's something that we really need to discuss.
Yeah, and you know, in the end, Harvey, who saved the people on Capitol Hill? It was the Metropolitan Police that came in with reinforcements. You know, unfortunately, they weren't sent in early enough because the mayor, you know, has to be asked for that. She can't just send them there. They have to be requested. And you're right. This affects us in so many ways.
As Charles has said, we have two hugely important national issues hanging on D.C. statehood. And then, of course, the simple question of justice. I mean, my sister, my niece, and I have two nieces and nephews and three grandnieces and a grandnephew in D.C., and the kids were all born there, and they have never had the right to vote in a national election. And so we have the security of the Capitol. We have the balance of power in the Congress. And then we have the simple fact of American citizens being taxed without representation. These are three biggies. And, you know, this is we'll be dealing with this in the national roundtable on a week from tomorrow. But this is something that these other two issues people really got to deal with.
Well, and you know what? That whole group of people that you just mentioned, this is something that really annoys me all the time, is that they say to people that live here, if you don't like it, move. Well, I'm sure your grandnieces and nephews weren't, you know, at birth, nobody came to them and said, hey, y'all, you want to live here or you want to, really? And now this is where their community is and they're, you know, it's the same thing with my kids. You know, none of the three of them asked to be here. Their mother and I did move here on our own, but none of them asked to be here. And it's just ridiculous. And by the way, I don't want to digress here, but I do want to mention that Harry Wasserman has been blessed with five daughters, I read. You have five daughters?
I am the Tevye of the anti-nuclear movement, if you've ever seen Sugar on the Roof.
You
I have five daughters,
so
and I've lost track of my grandchildren. I think I'm in double figures.
Wow.
But, we take this very seriously, and, of course, fighting for the environment. I don't know where I was cut off, but, you know, these kids, we're handing them a planet where 20 people or plus can die in a flood in Tennessee. I mean, come on, you know. People are being burned out of Northern California. We lost 80 people 2 years ago in the fires in Northern California, which were caused by an electric utility that has no idea what they're doing, and yet they're running two nuclear power plants in a place of Northern California. Was all the way up to Oregon and Washington. These are among the lushest, you know, heavily rainfalled areas in the world, and now they're dry as tinder. It's incredibly dangerous and disturbing. And clearly we have to convert 100% to renewable energy as soon as possible. Shut down all the nuclear plants, all the coal-fired burners, and the good news is that the renewable energy and the batteries and the efficiency are way more, way cheaper and create way more jobs than the old fossil nuclear stuff. So at least Mother Nature is cooperating with the environment, with the economy on that. And we've been advocating for a green powered earth since the 1970s, and we have made tremendous strides. I got to say, you know, it's an argument for activism. When we first started fighting nuclear power plants, and successfully, I might add, in a number of places, people asked us, how are you going to get the energy? And we said, well, solar and wind. But there really weren't solar and wind industries at the time. And in the last 50 years, we have seen the birth, because of environmental activism, of some of the biggest industries in the history of the world. I mean, wind and solar are gargantuan investment centers now, and employment opportunities. And you mentioned your brother putting in the solar panels in Ohio and then training people. You know, this has got to happen in Joe Manchin's West Virginia. Yeah. All these people digging coal. The coal industry is in complete straight down decline. And they should be, all these coal miners should be going to your brother's community college in Zanesville and learning how to install solar panels. That's the future.
Well, and you know, I would be remiss, since you brought up the fires, not to mention this, Harvey, but everybody that produces the show that we're now on was stationed in Paradise, California. And everybody on the show, the producers, Don and Doug, BBS Radio, the people that do PR for us, were all centered in Paradise, California. And the show was off the air, I can't remember for how long, maybe a month, because they lost everything. They lost everything. The studio burned to the ground. Their homes burned to the ground. Everybody's
moved.
This is really, you know, this isn't something that's ethereal in any sense. It really affects the lives of all of us. Hey, Charles, explain to me Make Good Trouble. Congressman John Lewis used to say that all the time, great civil rights leader, and the March to the Mall. Explain to us what the Make Good Trouble March is, and how our statehood group and Harvey's group and Joel's group is going to come together and be part of that.
Yes, it's the Make Good Trouble Dream March for D.C. Statehood, Green Jobs, and Justice. Of course, there are a number of progressive organizations, including Harvey and the Progressive Democrats of America, who realize how important it is for D.C. statehood to be considered a priority. And in commemoration of the 1963 March on Washington for jobs and freedom, we are going to have a series of events on the 28th. Of course, the emphasis for us and what makes it so important is really the importance of a single vote. And I emphasize that we have 712,000 Americans who are excluded from the democratic process. And it's important to know what that means. And first, I think I want to, before I get to the schedule, I want to emphasize here the importance of one vote. In 1774, the first Congressional Congress considered legislation that would have made American colonies into a British dominion like Canada. America would have been ruled by, would be ruled by an English-style parliament with a British governor. Even after Patrick Henry made his illustrious speech, that plan was defeated by one vote. And so in terms of D.C. statehood, we're talking about, and I emphasize again, two senators and one U.S. representative and 712,000 votes. So D.C. statehood is important. So we're having this rally. It's called the Dream March for D.C. statehood, Green Jobs and Justice. And since we're going to be joining the Make Good Trouble rally at the Lincoln Memorial, we call it the Make Good Trouble Dream March. The rally starts at 8:30 a.m. On Saturday, August the 28th, at Freedom Plaza. At 10 o'clock, we're going to form a march line from 10:30 to 11. We're going to march down to the Make Good Trouble rally at the Lincoln Memorial. Now, we want every D.C. statehood supporter, and I ask you, to start your march to the Lincoln Memorial at Freedom Plaza. And that's very important because we want all D.C. statehood organizations to show the world and everybody else that's coming to Washington, D.C., that statehood is our dream, and statehood is the most important thing to us. We're going to join up with everybody else down at the Lincoln Memorial, and, of course, those people that want to go to the National Mall can go there, too. But it is of the utmost importance that we let the world know that D.C. statehood is the most important issue for us, and it's also important for everybody to understand how the D.C. becoming the 51st state in America would benefit the nation and, in fact, the world.
You know, and let me just add, you don't even have to go back to the 1700s, Charles. You can ask Al Gore how important one vote is, you know, a couple of hanging chads, you know. And it's getting more and more like that, right? There are more and more very, very close elections. So, yeah, it's so important. Hey, Harvey, let me ask you, what is Solartopia?
Solartopia is a vision of a green-powered Earth. I wrote it in 2007, and there's a guy flying in an electric hydrogen airplane from Germany all the way across to Hawaii, and we look down on an Earth where all the nuclear plants are shut, all the fossil burners are shut, and we have converted to wind and solar with batteries and efficiency, and also a much different kind of agriculture. We've gone totally to organic agriculture because we can't sustain the kind of pesticides, herbicides, and chemical fertilizers that are being used, and we can't have these concentrated animal feeding operations, these CAFOs, that keep dropping huge quantities of manure all over the place and into our streams. So it is a vision which I think is attainable by 2030, and if we don't get there by 2030, our species may not actually survive, where everything is done ecologically. And what we've found over the years, Senator, and I've been involved heavily in environmental issues since the late 1960s. I moved to a farm in 1968, and the first decision we had to make was whether or not to use chemicals, and we decided to go 100% organic, and that farm, 50 years later, is still organic. And we found that organic methods are better than chemical-based methods. A meat diet is extremely destructive to the planet, and all the stuff we were saying about renewable energy turned out to be more than true. If you look at the technological advances in solar and wind and batteries and efficiency and electric cars, you see it goes straight up. That all the if you told people 10, 15 years ago, if you described the state of renewable energy now, it would not have been credible. The technological advances in these technologies have outstripped all expectations, whereas the negative impacts of nuclear power and fossil fuels has exceeded all negative impacts. If you had told people, there were warnings about global warming and all the other stuff. I would say this, having focused on nuclear, if you had described what happened at Three Mile Island the day before Three Mile Island, they would have said you were crazy. If you'd have described what happened at Chernobyl the day before it happened at Chernobyl, they would have locked you up in the Soviet Union. If you describe what happened at Fukushima the day before it happened, nobody would have believed you. So, all these bad things that have been happening with fossil fuels and nuclear power, are off the charts, and in a bad way. And all the things that have been happening with renewables are off the charts in a good way. And I'm not making that up. The numbers are there. So Solartopia is an acknowledgement that we have the ability to convert 100% to renewable energy, to organic gardening and farming, to social justice, which is always, a plus in terms of the economy and in human well-being, to D.C. statehood, to all the other things that make a democratic small d sense. And that's Solartopia.
Well, on the technology front, I've got to agree. I mean, I've been amazed at some of the things that I've encountered, including recently going to a motorcycle show and test driving a electric Harley Davidson that goes 110 miles an hour and gets 200 miles to a single charge. And makes no noise.
Yeah.
That was one of the selling points. They said they're selling them to police departments because you can hear the big old fat Harleys coming down the road, but this thing pulls up next to you and you're done before you realize that you've been caught speeding.
I was in a Tesla, and it's just like, your hat flies into the back seat. I mean, they are really amazing. Yeah. And electric cars, they don't have spark plugs, they don't have motor oil, there's like no moving parts in an electric car. It's not just that they're, all these other things, that they're way more efficient and lower maintenance. Everything about an electric car is better than a gas car, including now what you're saying, the range. The range is improving. That's been the one knock on electric cars. And I'm sure that in 10 years from now, nobody's going to think of it. There was one thing I did in my book, Solartopia. I put it out in 2007. I had this guy flying in an electric hydrogen plane, and somebody told me that it was not feasible, that it wouldn't work. Well, it turns out that my son-in-law's brother is an aeronautical engineer. And he has designed the fuselage of what in October will become the first workable electric airplane. Now, I in my limited technological capabilities, I had always wondered how you'll have an electric airplane with a jet engine loaded. It's not a jet engine. It's a props plane. So they're going to fly this plane outside of Seattle, Washington, in 2 months. The first one ever. It'll be all electric. It'll carry 8 passengers. And there you go. We'll be in the era of electric airplanes. Who would have thought that?
So explain to me, if you can, Harvey, why when I drive to see my daughter in Chicago, I drive to Indiana and there's windmill after windmill after windmill after windmill, but we don't see them in other places, in other states. Is that because
it's
of
all
state
political.
Legislators? Yeah.
Yes, it's all political. Ohio, I'm ashamed to say, the Speaker of the House of Ohio was caught by the FBI accepting a $61 million bribe in order to pass legislation that would give $1 billion bailout to the nuclear plants. But at the same time, the legislature in Ohio, which is ridiculously corrupt, has passed all this legislation to block wind and solar. Now, I'm going to tell you, the north coast of Ohio, along Lake Erie, the farmland there, because I was in the salt wind business for about a year, and I was up there trying to sell windmills, and we couldn't do it because the state blocked the windmills. But you could power within 5 years if the laws were changed. It's all legal. It's not technical. Within 5 years, you could power every city on the Great Lakes with 100% wind because the wind is incredibly strong in the Great Lakes and on the land around the Great Lakes. You could put a string of windmills through Lake Erie and into Lake Michigan and up through Superior and Huron, and you could power Toronto, Buffalo, Cleveland, Detroit, Chicago, Minneapolis, all the cities in the Great Lakes region could get 100% of their energy, electricity from wind within 5 years. And that's true all true of D.C., to all the coastal cities. People don't think of it as a challenge to offshore wind in the ocean that you don't have in the Great Lakes. You know what it is? Salt.
Yeah.
Salt corrosion is still a serious problem, but you don't have it in the Great Lakes. It's fresh water. You have a small problem with ice, but that's not such a big deal. So you could tomorrow begin the process and within 5 years, run a string of windmills along the north coast through all the Great Lakes and power, and you wouldn't even need solar. I mean, solar would be good to have, but you could power all the cities of the Great Lakes regions with wind, incredibly cheap, ridiculously cheap, creating thousands of jobs, a permanent sustainable economy, and the technology is 100% there. I mean, you know, that's where we're at, and that's Solartopia.
Well, before we go any further, Charles, can you give our listeners your website address, the website address for the Douglas Commonwealth Coalition, which will give them all the information about the marches and the other things that we've discussed tonight, the roundtable and all the other events that are going on?
Yes, so we're at www.douglascommonwealth.us, and that's Douglas with two S's, www.douglascommonwealth.us. And we ask everybody, go online and look at all the events that we have scheduled over the weekend from the 28th of August through the 30th of August. Our events include a rally at the U.S. Capitol after the Dream March and the rally at Lincoln Memorial. The Veterans United for Statehood are going to rally at the Capitol, and that starts at 7 to 9 o'clock, and then they're going to have a candlelight vigil. So we want everybody to support the Veterans United for D.C. Statehood. We have also mothers from around the country. We have an organization called Every Life Matters, and they're going to march from the Justice Department after submitting 500,000 signatures and they're going to march to the event. And then on Sunday, we have a prayer vigil at Freedom Plaza. We're asking pastors and ministers, not just from D.C., but all around the country, to pray for D.C. statehood, to pray for a green earth, and pray for justice. And then on Monday, as Harvey has mentioned, we're having a National Justice Roundtable, and that's going to be the action group. That's going to be the start of a movement around the country, all over in every state. So we're going to have regular roundtable sessions where we're going to have the people meet with leaders and offer solutions to problems that the people identify. So we'll have proposals from the ground up that address the numerous problems that are facing this country. And again, you know, all the things that Harvey said are absolutely correct. And the hottest issue of all is saving the planet above all else. If we don't take steps to save the planet, we have nothing, and the planet is in danger. Harvey, however, talks from the perspective of somebody who has two senators, who has at least one U.S. representative. Right. D.C. citizens have nobody. Our vote, and people talking about voter suppression, no taxation without representation in D.C. is the ultimate voter suppression. And I mean suppression in the strongest sense, not just to conceal or smother or sweep under the carpet of voting rights, but suppression in the sense of defeat, vanquished, exterminated for 220 years. D.C. citizens have nothing, no voice whatsoever. So I emphasize how important, and I know D.C. citizens realize that, and I ask every D.C. statehood organization and every citizen in D.C. to put D.C. statehood first. March with us. Gather at Freedom Plaza. The mayor is going to be there with us. And those individuals who want to gather somewhere else, let me just be real frank here. If you're talking about going to McPherson Square and marching anywhere, when you leave that location, come straight to Freedom Plaza, where our rights and D.C. statehood is going to be the most important thing, because we need to show the country, the world, that our rights and our freedom are important to us.
Well, let me point out that, very well said, Charles, and let me point out that the event at the Capitol, one of the reasons we're having the event at the Capitol with veterans, we're going to give them light sticks, I believe, and we're going to have a twilight vigil there. And the significance of that is that the whole disenfranchised status of the people of the District of Columbia originated in was conceptualized in Philadelphia, where Congress met at Carpenter's Hall and was surrounded by a bunch of veterans from the Revolutionary War who hadn't been paid, and they surrounded Carpenter's Hall with torches, and Congress had to slip out the back door and escape to New Jersey. And as somebody that was born and raised in New Jersey as a young man, I can tell you that's a scary proposition. But when they came to Washington, Madison said, we must control the district so that there can't be an insurrection against Congress. I think since January 6th, we realized that's moot at this point. So that's why the veterans at the Capitol, it reflects on that particular event. So in that regard, Charles, tell us why August 28th is so important. Why is it so important to be on the Mall on that particular day?
Well, that's a day that we are gathering to commemorate Martin Luther King's iconic I Have a Dream speech. And so with all of the issues that are facing, our country, in fact, the world. This is a day when we can call attention to the need for D.C. statehood, the need for a green earth, and the need for justice. So we're calling attention on this very day because Martin Luther King emphasized the importance of justice and the importance of unity. To, you know, divided, we will fall. United, we stand. So I'd like to say about D.C. statehood is that united, we will be a state. Divided, we will remain disenfranchised. And so we're calling on everybody on that day and in that weekend. We have a whole weekend of events to commemorate the 1963 March on Washington. I want to point out to everybody that the civil rights movement and other movements for justice were divided. But A. Philip Randolph and Martin Luther King came together at the last minute, and they united to have that historic march on Washington. So we need to unite those individuals, D.C. statehood supporters. We want you to unite on that day to show the world, and I emphasize that D.C. statehood is our dream. And that's why we call it the Dream March on Washington. And I would be remiss if I did not give Harvey Wasserman, and Harvey doesn't like this. He's a very modest man. But Harvey suggested to us that we do this, and it has taken hold and grown, and we have what we call a three-issue alliance where progressive groups around the country have decided, the groups like the National Election Protection Coalition, Progressive Democrats of America, and People Demanding Action, people around the country have decided that they are going to put D.C. statehood first in this three-issue coalition of D.C. statehood supporters, Green Earth supporters, and justice activists from around the country. So if people from around the country are going to make D.C. statehood a priority, I call on D.C. statehood supporters and D.C. citizens all over the city from every ward. Put D.C. statehood first. Come down to Freedom Plaza. Join us as we march down to the Lincoln Memorial and start a full day and weekend of supporting D.C. statehood and putting D.C. statehood first.
Well, let me add
well
to that.
Well said, Charles. Very well
yeah,
said.
Yeah, well said. And let me just add to that, because I hear this from young people all the time, that they can't make a difference, that the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. changed the world, and he was murdered at the age of 39. So if you're a young person that thinks that you can't change things, you should look to him as an example of what a single person who's committed, as Jane Goodall used to say, can do. She said that they can change the world, and in fact, they're the only people that ever have changed the world. So we encourage all you young people to get out there and make good trouble and join us in this, because this is really a turning point for us, isn't it, gentlemen? Don't we stand on
Absolutely.
A precipice right here? Yeah. Where
I got to say, one of the reasons that occurred to me to do this on the weekend of the King speech memorial is that I taught U.S. history from 2004 to 17. I taught U.S. history, modern U.S. history, probably 50 times, and in every time I played the "I Have a Dream" speech. So I have heard the "I Have a Dream" speech, which is 18 minutes. At least 100 times in my lifetime. So I'm very well aware of that date. And I wanted to emphasize, you know, I lived on a farm with a bunch of hippies in the late 1960s, and they came in, and the big guys came in and said they were going to build a nuclear plant 4 miles from our house. And we said, no, you're not, and we're totally nonviolent. And that not only was that plant never built, but they never brought in the bulldozers. And where they were going to put the plant is now Nature Conservancy. And you can go there and sit and look up at the sky and reflect on the fact that this would have been a 2,400 megawatt two nuclear reactors. So we won that. We won. I'll tell you one thing. When I was 15 years old, I was a junior in high school, 15 or 16, and we had a demonstration in Columbus, Ohio. There was a roller rink that was segregated. This is in 1962, for God's sake, 8 years after the Brown decision. And they were segregated, and we demonstrated, and we worked with the I had no idea what was going on. I was just a kid, but I was part of it, and we won. This is the first thing I was ever involved in terms of social action, and I got spoiled because I was captain of my high school tennis team, and I was very competitive, and winning really made a big difference to me. It wasn't all just, hey, let's go out there and give it a college try. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, we're in a big ball game here, and we got to win, and we can win. We have a long history of winning. And, you know, you wouldn't have a radio show, Senator Brown, if we hadn't had a history of winning based on the First Amendment and all the other stuff. So this is a country that was born in revolution. Nobody ever gave the colonists a chance of defeating the British Imperial Army, and they did. And, you know, your quote from James Madison about the need to protect the capital, in national terms, that cuts to the heart of the D.C. statehood movement. We cannot protect our nation's capital, and we cannot have a fair and balanced electorate or Congress without D.C. statehood. So we have to protect our elections, and that starts with D.C. statehood. We have to protect our capital, our democracy, and we can't do it without D.C. statehood. And that's why we're starting with you, Senator Brown and Charles Moreland, on Monday, August 30th. We'll have this national roundtable, Justice Roundtable, first time ever. It's going to go 4 hours, and then the fifth hour we'll call the Lasagna Hour. We'll just hang out. We're going to cover D.C. statehood, election protection, which is enormously important, the saving the earth and justice, ending homelessness and poverty. And that 4 hours is going to fly by, I guarantee you. So we're inviting everybody. Our website is electionprotection2024.org. electionprotection2024.org. You can write me directly at solartopia@gmail. SolarTopia at gmail.com. And we are tomorrow, Monday, having a roundtable with Charles and Senator Brown will both be there at 5 o'clock Eastern time. Those go for about 2 hours, and we discuss issues across the board of election protection.
Oh, my gosh. Anish Jenkins, what do you have to say? You're so important to our effort for D.C. statehood. Are you with us, Anish?
I'm here.
Okay, please.
I would like to invite all of the members of Stand Up for Democracy in D.C., otherwise known as Free D.C., to attend this beautiful weekend. It is a weekend chock full of everything that we've been fighting for. We've been fighting for D.C. statehood. We've been fighting for green jobs and justice. We have been fighting for justice for a long, long time, and it's going to happen. Your attendance is going to make a big difference. And I want you to come out to support this event, which is well planned and well woman, and we got to do it.
Well, thanks.
And we're so happy to have Anish Jenkins and Stand Up coming to the march along with the mayor. And we need to unify. And Anish, we certainly want to thank you for joining with Douglas Commonwealth Coalition. Real quickly, let me just explain what the Douglas Commonwealth Coalition is. Of course, our goal is to unite the D.C. statehood movement. The Douglas Commonwealth Coalition is composed of the elected officials to whom the voters have reposed trust and confidence in their integrity and ability to get statehood, along with organizations like Anise Jenkins, Stand Up for D.C. and Democracy. We are a coalition of organizations whose primary goal and objective is statehood. And we're so happy to have you, Anise, who I consider the heart and soul of the statehood movement. Anise is going to speak. She's going to speak at all of our events. And hopefully we're going to be able to convince the folks at the Lincoln Memorial to let Anise, as well as our senator, our two senators and our U.S. representative, those are the most important individuals, Eleanor and the mayor, to speak about D.C. statehood.
Well,
yes,
yeah,
now,
you all will yeah, certainly be welcome to speak on our National Justice Coalition Roundtable on August 30th on Monday in the first hour. So we do want to certainly invite you all to speak at that.
Well, and I know you all want to be real citizens. You want to be true citizens. Just think, you're paying true federal taxes. You want to be real American citizens. You go out and fight for these rights and die for these rights. And there's no need for you to be unhopeful. D.C. statehood is our dream, and it's the dream march for you to do on the anniversary of Dr. King's great I Have a Dream speech.
And let me just say,
thank you so much, Anise, for your support.
Anise has been a mentor to me since the day I started in this job 15 years ago. She truly is, as Charles says, the heart and soul of our movement. So thank you so much, Anise. We're just about out of time here. So let me ask you one more quick question, Harvey. What are we doing internationally? Because when I was a graduate student, I covered the Farm Bill, PL 480. And one of the things that amazed me was that we had banned DDT for use in the United States, but we were still exporting hundreds of millions of tons of DDT around the world. Have we gotten any better about stuff like that?
No, we're behind the rest of the world. We just now banned a chemical I can't pronounce, core something, that is in the side that really harms children. Are we okay there?
Yeah, you're okay. You're on.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, fine.
Okay, and it harms children, and Europe has banned it a long time ago. We've also got a big fight over the nicotinoids, which kill bees, and again, we're behind. So in the United States, where Silent Spring was published in 1962, warning by Rachel Carson, warning against the dangers of DDT, we have been slow to join the rest of the world in banning these other chemicals. It's ridiculous. Same thing worldwide. We are really behind much of the rest of the world in protecting our elections. We actually had a situation, this is hard to imagine, but we had a situation in Ohio where the Secretary of State in 2004 banned and threatened to arrest UN observers coming to observe the presidential election in Ohio in 2004.
Crazy.
And I got to say, you know, again, emphasizing how we can make a difference. The election protection movement, which grew out of the elections in 2000 and 2004, which were very dubious and barely contested, over the past 20 years, we have built an election protection movement that I feel was 100% responsible for putting Joe Biden in the White House. Because if the election of 2020 had been conducted on electronic voting machines, there is no doubt in my mind that Donald Trump would have won. And the only reason that we had what most people consider, and as a historian I will confirm, the election of 2020 was the fairest and most small-D democratic election in American history. because an election protection movement was able to respond to the COVID pandemic, and provide us with a roadmap involving a paper ballot and vote by mail and protecting the precincts and things like that.
Well, let me end by saying that D.C. statehood is closer than it's ever been. Passed in the House, and we can depend on 48 votes in the Senate. But close doesn't count. 99.5 won't do. We got to have 100. And that means we have to stand up because it is said that a man can't ride your back unless it's bent. We need to stand up beginning on August the 28th. We want everybody to know on that date it begins the end of our oppression. And the end to taxation without representation in the District of Columbia.
Okay, well, that's where we end the show. Hear to that. And thank you, Harvey Wasserman, for joining us, and Charles Moreland for joining us. And we dedicate a song at the end of each show to our guests. And since we probably dedicated a bunch of songs to Charles Moreland, this one goes out to Harvey Wasserman. It's our own Marvin Gaye with Mercy, Mercy Me, The Ecology. Thanks.
Thank you so
much.
We'll
see you next week.
Thank you so much, Senator, for all you do.
Senator Brown,
and Harvey,
you guys are total
for your
treasures. We appreciate it.
Thank you.